This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Hikers and runners flock to the rocky trails of Umstead Park every weekend. For them, it's a wooded respite from the workaday world that rushes by just outside its gates. But for a handful of families, the trees and hills of William B. Umstead Park were once home. The waters of Crabtree Creek fueled a mill that stood at the heart of their community. The rocky soil reluctantly yielded corn and cotton that provided a meager living.
This was rough farming country. It'd work you to death. John Keene over there showed me how to make the land fall back in line. First thing, you got to have it's got to be in the right condition. And then you set your equipment up right, and it'll break up and roll right. And then you can plant it. And they were thrifty. So they knowed how to do stuff and had to, you know, to survive.
That is Buck Haley, former resident of what is today William B. Umstead State Park. His memories are among many collected in a new book titled Stories in Stone. It chronicles the experiences of those who lived in the land along Crabtree Creek. Stories in Stone results from almost two decades of work by its author, Tom Weber. He was a volunteer supporter of Umstead State Park who was fascinated with its history. Sadly, Tom did not live to see the book published. He died last year. Many who appreciate Tom's efforts are still with us, though. Among them are my guests in the studio. Gene Spooner is chair of the Umstead Coalition. Eric Nygaard is a district superintendent for North Carolina State Park System and a former ranger at Umstead. And Joe Grissom spent years, his early years, growing up in what is today William B. Umstead State Park. Gene, Eric, and Joe, welcome to the State of Things. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Eric, you got to know Tom when you were a ranger at the park. How did he help connect you with the community that once lived there?
That's right. When I took the job as a ranger, one of my jobs was to actually do some research for the exhibits that were to be provided to the public for the park. And I was quickly told by Gene Spooner, well, you need to get to know Tom because he's already done considerable research on his book. And so I got to know Tom quite well. He took me around the park to see some of the stones that he is writing about, the old foundations for many of these families that lived there in the park.
And did he have a personal connection with the park as well?
No, he didn't, other than his great interest in the land and Umstead as a park. I think he did much of his work with Gene early on.
Well, Joe, you did have a connection. You spent your first 12 years living in what is that park. Tell us about your connection and your memories of that place.
Well, I guess but my earliest memories were going to the mill, going to the old mill. I do remember before I was even old enough to go to school, my grandmother would give me a little lard pail each morning, and I would go down to the mill and asked my granddad to get me some meal. He said, "All right, boy." He always called me boy. I didn't know my name, I don't believe, but he would say, "Hold that bucket under the hopper there." And I would hold it on, and I would just love the feel of that cornmeal as running into the bucket. And then I would take that filled up little lard tin, and I would take it back to my grandmother, and she'd make cornbread for the day. I do remember that incident in my life.
Can't get much fresher than that.
Now,
there's an interesting story about that mill because many people, at least they had thought for a long time that the mill came down in a storm, but that's not the truth.
Well, the mill actually came down as the result of the storm, a heavy rain during the spring of 1939. My dad came home one day and he said, "I'm going to walk down to the mill." The mill wasn't running at the time, but he still felt a sense of responsibility for it. And he goes down there, and he comes back an hour or so later, and he had had an accident. One of the big boulders had given way with him. He was looking at the water going over the dam and so forth. And he announced to us that the mill won't be there tomorrow morning. That dam's not going to hold up, and it did not. The next morning, that mill was gone and most of the dam.
And, Eric, it's kind of interesting because for a long time, rangers had thought that had been torn down, right?
That's right, yeah. The interesting thing about William B. Umstead State Park is that it grew out of a land reclamation project, whereas majority of our state parks were built around significant state features, whereas in this case, the New Deal programs were looking for areas across the United States to do some land reclamation, put people back to work, provide jobs, and ultimately find a wonderful source of recreation for the future generations. And that's exactly what we have now, a place where people can go run and visit the park.
And interestingly, at that point, that land had been pretty well spent, right? It was pretty hard to make a living there, wasn't it?
Yes. We had a neighbor close to us that did have about an acre, maybe two acres of tobacco, and that was not grown in that area, but this family decided to grow it one year. And with a very, very meager crop, I've heard my dad say, and then, lo and behold, on top of that, they lost one of the barns. Before it was cured out.
And a lot of interesting stories, too, that came out of this. And, Gene, you and other members of the Umstead Coalition who worked closely, you were working with Tom while he was doing his research. One of the stories that he revived was that of Mercedes Steele and her collection of folk songs. Who was Mercedes?
Mercedes was a graduate student at UNC Chapel Hill, and she came to the park and collected numerous songs, including from Rebecca Mammy Jones, who is now also preserved at the University of Chapel Hill at their music library, folk music library, as well as the Library of Congress.
And so there was music, and of course Tom was collecting stories as well, right?
Yes. Tom has a beautiful gift for us in 18 years of his research and talking with the families. He really believed that to appreciate what we have now, we're best to learn from the souls and the memories of the community. So he took extensive time with the families and research and give us now an oral history, which he documented in the Stories in Stone book with over 400 photos and illustrations, and also mapped hikes where we can see the sites we have now in the book.
The book itself is a beautiful artifact. The photographs, there are photographs of documents in here and drawings and maps and old maps of Wake County. It's a fascinating document, along with some really great stories. But, Joe, we talked about the fact that land was getting harder and harder to farm, but still people lived there. What was it like for your family to have to leave? Because folks were forced off to make this park possible, right?
For me, it was quite a traumatic situation. I was a young fellow. I didn't want to leave the park. My mother and dad didn't want to leave either, but we were not landowners there. Our heart wasn't attached to the land like many people were at the time. We did leave and moved just the outside border of the park. For many others, they held on as long as they could, but then the time came that government would get hard on their case and close the deal, and they had to leave. People left over a couple-year period, I guess.
It must have been particularly difficult for some of those people who did own the land and whose families went back generations, right?
Some of the parcels of property there went back, I understand, to original land grants from the King of England back through their families.
It must have been
That's
terribly
how long they've been on the been in that land. Yes.
Well, Eric, I wonder what it's like for you. On the one hand, you know, your responsibility is conservancy. You look around that area now, and I'm sure there are a lot of people very grateful that the sprawl doesn't go into that park. There's a green
Absolutely.
Space. On the other hand, you know, people had to leave their land. It's got to be
I
tough
recognize
for you.
That. Yeah. When I got there in 98, in interviewing Buck Haley, the one who we just had heard a clip from, Buck, I could even sense that even in 98, that there was some resentment towards me as I was a government man and that obviously the family had been moved off the land. But through Tom and his easy nature and working with the people to understand their stories, I got to know many of the people myself. And the beauty of it is that their stories are told and that their land now is actually preserved for them to be able to go back to. We don't have strip malls. We don't have stores and multiple homes on all these properties. They can return to the land.
Joe, do you? Do you get back? Do you go through the park?
Mm-hmm. Every time I get a chance, yes.
What's it like for you to see it now? Little workout stations and paths running through it?
Of course, as I say, I grew up there. Then I had a period of I was absent from the place sometime in the military, and then after that, looking after children and that. But then I started going back and visiting as much as I could, every opportunity that I had. And I visit the park at least once every couple of weeks now, just walking and seeing old sights. The biggest change to me is I remember fields, large gardens, and small cotton fields and so forth. But it's none of that. It's all trees now.
Can you find the place where you lived?
Oh, exactly. Oh, yes, yes.
What's there now?
Just a pile of stone, as the book indicates there. Just stone, the chimneys, all the woodwork by the park crews and so over the years have removed the woodwork and everything that would and left the stones, the old stone foundations, and especially the chimneys, stone chimneys, which indicates where a house stood and mm-hmm. every time.
Gene, Tom Wibber, as we said, passed away before he could see this book come to fruition. That had to be difficult for you working with him all this time.
It was. Us, the Umstead Coalition, which is the publisher of the book and a volunteer organization for service and preservation of Umstead State Park, were very, very sad. But we do know that I worked with Tom since the early 1990s on this book, and this was his love. This was his life ambition, and I know he appreciates it. It wasn't about him. It was about giving back to the community members. I've talked with many community members before and since the book has come out, and they are overwhelmingly appreciative of what Tom Wibber did to share their stories, as well as I think they feel better now about the value of their land and that it was protected and that they were part of a valuable resource and a future community asset.
So the book itself, because on the one hand, you know, as Eric suggests, it's one thing to, you know, you have to move off the land, that's tough. But if you realize it's now a park and not a strip mall, mm-hmm. there's some value in that. But you say the book itself has been some satisfaction and brought some peace to people who used to live there.
I truly believe that's the case. And I think I think Eric found that out when he was talking with Tom with some of the family members as well. Also, this was the stimulus package of the Roosevelt era in the 1930s, and many of the individuals got jobs, which they did not have before. And in a manner, that was an economic resource for them as well. The Works Progress Administration, WPA, and the CCC were in the park.
Imagine that.
So it did provide
creating jobs and work for people that does mm-hmm. something productive and ultimately leads to a future. Those were the days. Joe, you've seen the book, obviously. How did things change? Did anything change for you about your memory? Did it bring back memories? Did it change any of the memories once you saw this book?
It didn't change any memories of mine. It just made more vivid and connected a number of the memories. And when I see pictures and see names there. But my memories are just as is portrayed there, but it's made it more vivid.
Are you in touch with any of the people who used to be your neighbors?
Yes, occasionally. Mm-hmm. Some of the Haleys and the Kings, some of the descendants of the King families are right there that's mentioned. I see them often.
Eric, what is the state of preservation today? It seems like it's more and more difficult. People, after the fact, all say, oh, I'm so glad you did it. But at the time, there's a lot of pressure, and it's always very difficult to carve out this land and preserve.
Well, as I said, this is some early in the 30s. This had to have been some enormous effort that people had foresight well in advance to see that this was going to be a wonderful opportunity to create a park for future generations. And it must have been difficult, as you say, for those early families. But as we all now know, the Stories in Stone is a wonderful gift that has been given back to these people so that their stories can be told while they're on the land.
What do you think of the impact of this book for people who didn't live there, for people who don't know the history of the park?
It will give everyone a wonderful appreciation for the property there that they all love and enjoy running, but now it will give them an opportunity to learn more about what it was before it was a park.
I want to thank all of you for being on the program today. So great to talk with you.
Thank you, Frank.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Talking with Eric Nygaard, District Superintendent with the State Park System. Joe Grissom grew up in what is today William B. Umstead State Park, and Gene Spooner is chair of the Umstead Coalition. You can find out more about the coalition and the book at umsteadcoalition.org. Tom Weber's book, Stories in Stone, is available for sale at independent bookstores in Raleigh, Durham, and Chapel Hill. Visit your independent bookstore. Pick up this book, Stories in Stone. State of Things produced by Amber Nimix and Alex Granados. Ginny Mueller's our intern. Robin Copley is the technical director. Al Wadarski sitting in today. Managing editor Lindsay Foster Thomas and Susan Davis is our senior producer. This is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.